TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 600, and I am Libby, your host, and we have returning guests.
This is Tom. I chair Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Screen Tom podcast on iTunes and a podcast by Spotify.
Hi, this is Yusun, costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
All right, Tom, hit us with the news. What do you got?
Amazon Prime has announced that Upload Season 4 will be its final season.
Thank you. Sorry.
They've given a series order for the drama El Gato Negro, based on a comic book. Diego Boneta is attached to star. Jesse Williams, formerly of Grey's Anatomy, and currently possibly, he was in the third season of Only Murders in the Building. He's going to star in the high-end Italian original Costiera, an English language action drama with comedic elements. The Terminal List prequel series has cast Dar Salim in a key return.
Why is there a prequel? Never mind. All right. That show, I didn't think that was very good. Why are we having a prequel?
I think the ratings were good in a key recurring role. Apple TV Plus has given a series order for Neuromancer series adaptation based on the William Gibson novel. I still want somebody to finish the first adaptation of the. Oh, the thing we watched, The Peripheral.
Oh, that's true. That was so good, yeah.
And then freaking Amazon, boo. CBS is doubling down on NCIS stuff. Holy crap. NCIS Origins has cast Austin Stowell to play young Gibbs, and they've ordered a Tony Ziva spinoff to series. Why they
really?
Put that guy in another lead? Because he's toxic.
Yeah.
But whatever. As we talked about earlier, the Young Sheldon spinoff focusing on Georgie and Mandy has also been ordered to series, and Maya Bialik and Jim Parsons will reunite on screen for the Young Sheldon series finale. They also picked up Tracker for season 2.
Already? Really? That show's so mediocre. Sorry.
The pilot was, I don't know.
Mediocre. I did too.
Well, post Super Bowl, a test pattern could get great numbers. So. I don't know. Anyway, Christian Kane is going to reprise Jacob Stone in The Librarians, the next chapter on CW, because they dropped the. Ooh.
The Librarians is still a thing? I'm sorry.
It's a new spinoff series. Fox has landed the Baywatch reboot. Okay, whatever. for news we actually care about, Last of Us Season 2 has cast Danny Ramirez from Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Ariella Barber from Runaways, Tati Gabrielle from Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and Spencer Lord from Riverdale. Lionsgate is shopping a Twilight animated series, which will, again, adapt the books.
The one with the vampires and the werewolves?
Yeah, the vampires and the werewolves, the sparkly vampires and blah, blah, blah,
sparkly
whatever.
Sparkly vampires. Oh, my God. Animated series? Never mind. All right.
Don't ask. Sarah Ramirez is ankling and just like that before season 3. Hulu has announced that Margaret Qualley will play Amanda Knox in a limited series. And also, Only Murders season 4 has cast Eugene Levy, Eva Longoria, and Kumail Nanjiani.
Man, they keep getting...
Ooh, that sounds good.
I know. They just keep getting just serious movie stars rolling in on... I mean, once you get
Meryl Streep,
then you can get anybody. So, yeah.
NBC has cast Lex Scott Davis as one of the female leads in Suits LA, and they've given a series order for The Hunting Game, a crime procedural from J.J. Bailey and Jake Coburn. Netflix... Beef season 2 will focus on feuding couples, and they're in negotiations to cast the following as couples: Anne Hathaway and Jake Gyllenhaal, Charles Melton and Kaylee Spaney. So they're going for like movie stars now.
They got Emmys, so yeah, I see it.
Nick Offerman and Betty Gilpin are joining Death by Lightning, the President Garfield Assassination Limited series. Lena Dunham's comedy Too Much has added a bunch of cast members. The ones are more names: Richard E. Grant, Stephen Fry, Andrew Rannells, Rhea Perlman, Rita Wilson, and Emily Ratajkowski. And to no one's surprise, except for me, Avatar: The Last Airbender has been picked up for seasons 2 and 3.
Yes.
So they can finish ruining their adaptation. I'm sorry. I
love it. I think it's great.
And they canceled The Brother's Son after one season.
That sucks.
Paramount Plus has given a series order for The Donovans, loosely based on Ray Donovan. Guy Ritchie's going to direct. And then director Joe Wright and writers Jez and John Henry Butterworth have boarded the political thriller series The Department. PBS, this is kind of crazy. Before season 5, Miss Scarlet is ditching the Duke. So it's just going to be Miss Scarlet. Bye, Duke. Peacock has announced that Scott Speedman is joining Yvonne Strahovski in the horror thriller series Teacup. Stars, the Outlander prequel Blood of My Blood has cast younger versions of 4 key leads. We don't really know who these kids are, so I'm not going to tell you all about them. They picked up BMF for season 4, and Tobias Menzies has announced he is not returning for Outlander season 8. And that's it.
Wow. Okay, then. Let's move on with the shows. First up, we're going to talk about, of all things, The Walking Dead, which I think we swore it off, but this spinoff series is my cup of tea, and it is The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, and it's all about Rick and Michonne.
I was going to say, the ones we care about.
the ones that we care about. That is a very good assessment, because that show definitely went off the rails once Rick left. It's like nobody cares anymore. And what the first episode, man, they came out of the gate on fire. They were just like, okay, it's been 5 years. Rick has made 3 attempts already to escape. Now we're watching attempt number 4. And the first thing he does is cut his hand off. And you're just like, wait, what?
Was it infected?
No, he did it because he was chained. He was chained up.
Because he had that tether thing.
He had that tether. And so it was the point of it was, yes, it was dumb because I was like, blood loss, you're not going to be able to outrun them. But it was to show you how desperate he was. Like, he had tried over 5 years. He had tried 3 times to escape. This was his 4th attempt, and it was not well thought out. It was absolutely born of desperation. And it was to show you that he was at the end of his rope. And that's where we start.
The end of his chain.
So we start there. And it was stunning. Like, I did not see that coming at all. And I was like, okay, we're 5 minutes in and holy crap. And then we get flashes of his dreams where he's dreaming like his perfect interaction with Michonne. So we see that that's what he's been doing to kind of sustain himself and keep his sanity, is just to dream about the two of them meeting before the world fell apart. And what would that look like? And at the same
time, was he married back then?
Yes. But
kind of interesting how he kind of sidestepped that.
Yeah, we won't worry about that. But he's just assuming that zombies never happened. And then he runs into her and the world's not over. What would it look like? And it was like a little meet cute. I have to say, the whole 5 pizzas and a wedding ring proposal, I was like, dude, that was smooth. I thought that was pretty smooth.
I would hope that somebody didn't think that was Love Actually, because he's in that movie.
Yes, they know that. They are quite aware.
But I would hope that somebody didn't turn to that scene thinking, is this Love Actually 2? And then zombies.
Okay. I see what you mean. But it was really nice and to see Danai dressed in regular clothes and be pretty and be cute versus serious and murder you. Yeah, it was very adorable. And he was adorable. Like, both of them were super adorable in those scenes, which I thought was great. But it also showed you his mindset, where his head was at. And you just see it just escalating. And you get to the end, and it's just like he's broken. Like, they took like 7 years, but they broke him. And watching that was really kind of pain. Like, he tries to kill himself like twice. Like, it was
Has he
crazy.
been off the show that long? Had he been off Mothership show that long?
I mean, in real time, I think it's been 6 years.
Okay.
Just because of the delays in the show and the seasons. And then by the time they got this done, so it's been like 6 years since he left the show, 5, 6 years. But it was really gut-wrenching to watch that. But Tom, go ahead. What did you think?
No, I mean, I haven't watched Walking Dead since the middle season 4.0, so it's been a minute. But I do like, I mean, they were two of my favorite characters, and so I wasn't watching when they coupled them. I heard about it from you, and then I might stick around for this one because it's not open. Well, it probably will get a season two because I'm sure the ratings are huge,
The
and
ratings are insane. Yeah, they said it's the highest
AMC's
ratings.
greedy, but it's kind of cool to see that they're co-creators and executive producers on the show.
And right, Danai wrote episode 4.
Oh, good for her.
Right.
So no,
So.
it's I'll be interested to see what, like, I haven't had a chance to watch episode two yet, but I'll be interested to see what the narr what kind of the narrative pattern, what the shape of the show is going to be. Are they going to be still stuck in this weird city with Terry O'Quinn ruling with an iron fist, or Brigadier General, whatever his name is, or whatever. I mean, one of my problems with Walking Dead, it shouldn't have been a franchise, and they have squeezed every bit of.
Yeah, they have, and some of them don't work. Like Dead
Ugh.
City, I think, is dead on arrival, and the Daryl Dixon show, even though it's pretty and in France, sucks. It doesn't, it's not well written.
Is F
So,
the Walking Dead still on, or is that
no, it
the.
ended. It ended.
Yeah, that show was bad.
It got better
Well, because they
when
rebooted their
Morgan,
own
yeah,
show.
they rebooted it, and when Morgan came, it got better, and then it got worse again, and so then I bailed on Fear, and then Fear ended, and then Morgan at the end, Morgan's like, I gotta go find Rick Grimes. I was like, I feel a pattern happening. So
Gee.
last time we see Morgan, he's like, I'm gonna go look for Rick, and I was like, oh, well, let's see if he shows up on the show at some point,
Yeah, if they
but
put it there, I'm sure it'll happen.
But yeah, I thought the first episode was really strong, just to show his mindset, where he's at, and then we watch him break because, and then I was so surprised that you get Michonne at the end of the episode. Like, holy crap. And
Well, I
also,
got.
Okafor was such a great character. I really liked him. I liked him a lot, and then he gets blown up into little bitty pieces.
Well, that's episode
Yeah,
two.
no, that was an episode. Trust me, I've seen these episodes a
boy,
million times before.
that felt like I hadn't seen that actor before, but for me it felt like, boy, you wanted Michael T. Williamson and couldn't afford him or couldn't get him, so you got this guy. He was
He was sufficient. He but I thought he was an
sufficient.
inter yeah, I thought he was an interesting character. And then he took one to the chest, and I was it, and he was like in mid-sentence, so it was very startling. And then he just like flew into jelly. And you're just like, oh
Oh, it's the
no.
Walking Dead. They like to revel in their gore, so.
I'm not disagreeing, but it still stunned me. And then Rick crashes the plane and our helicopter and runs into Michonne as she's slicing every. You see her sword like come through and just killing everybody. And you're like, wait, is that? And then you just have, and then they just and they cut to black right at the reunion, and you're like, no. So Houston, what did you think of the first one? And then we'll lead into the second.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought that the I had stopped watching the show before they killed off Glenn because I knew they were going to kill off Glenn, and I was like, I don't want to watch them kill off Glenn. And I so I bailed on the show ages ago and I didn't watch any of the spin-offs, and so I wasn't all that keen on watching this, except I did care about Rick and Michonne, and I thought, well, let me see, what they're going to do with this. And I thought that it was really done well. I loved the fact that they didn't make us wait too long. This was huge to reunite them for us, because I thought there's only six episodes, and I don't want to watch
them desperately trying to get back to each other. Like, I was like, that is going to be a bore. And I thought, I don't want to watch that. So I thought they did a wonderful job showing us immediately what the stakes were going to be about them reuniting. And then, of course, you know, in the second episode, we know, we guess that we're going to now see what was going on with Michonne during this time of her trying to get back to him. So yeah, I thought the first episode was tight and it was good. It made me care about that Okafor character. And then even though they took him away from us, made me care about immediately getting back to Rick. And, you know, and I didn't think, and I was also wondering, like, you know, how many zombies were we going to get and how, you know, how that was going to go. And immediately they set up the show. It's about, you know, the humans. It's about, you know, the morality tale. It's not going to be, you know, a big zombie, you know, video game kill fest. So that one scene where they are killing them through the holes in the brick wall, it kind of actually is a video game where they're just kind of taking them out one by one. But other than that, the actual episode, I thought, okay, I know what I'm getting. And I thought they did a great job setting that up. So I was very excited for the next episode. Very excited.
And then we get Michonne, which we see her journey. And when she left the show, she had found a phone that says Rick, such and such and something in Japanese, and a picture of her and Judith. And she was like, what the heck is this? And so that's how she knew that Rick was still alive. So she's got this phone, she's got his boots, and she then goes on this journey trying to find him. And the only hint she has is this naval yard, and she wants to get there. And she meets all these really interesting characters, though I will say that I thought that the couple that they met at the beginning, I was like, oh, these guys are not going to make it. Like, they were super nice, and they were so nice that I was so sure they were going to die. And I wasn't entirely wrong on that. But she meets Nat, who I thought was such a great character. He was funny. And they did a really good job of character development for this guy in such a short amount of time. So he's charming, he's funny, he becomes Michonne's like best friend almost instantly. And they just really get along. And then they get stuck in that department store for like a year because the CRM bombs them with chemical weapons. And did you pick out why the CRM bombed them, Yusen?
No, I didn't. I didn't understand it.
They have a thing at the very end where they do the interview or whatever. And what Gimple said is because their caravan, while they're going through the streets, they were too close to the CRM headquarters. And so anybody, because their whole thing is secrecy. CRM is all about secrecy. Nobody can know that they exist or where they are. That's why you can never leave. So if any group of people get too close to them, they just kill them. And so that's why they got bombed. They were too close. So then it's like they dropped it wasn't mustard gas, it was chlorine gas on them, and it burns out their lungs and everything. And so they have to spend a year healing. And we see the passing of the seasons through this window. And I thought that was a really good touch to show you the passage of time and just to see the two of them bonding and becoming really good friends and stuff. So, and I also really like that we get to that moment with the reunion at the helicopter at the 30-minute mark on the second episode. So then you have another like 20 minutes of they're now together. Because I was afraid that when the episode ended, we'd be back at the same spot.
Right.
So I was really happy that we weren't. Though Rick... telling Michonne, like after they do their big reunion and she's all, I found you, which was, I may have been crying. I won't, you know, divulge if that's true or not. But after they do their big reunion, Rick is like, okay, they're coming. Michonne, you need to pretend to not be who you are. And she's like, what does that mean? And he's like, oh, you need to be a bee, like not a leader. You have to pretend to not be strong. And I was like, have you met Michonne? Like, how is that going to work? And her doing her interview, and she was like doing her inner Carol and trying to pretend. I mean, even her pretending to be a little ditzy and weak just didn't, it still didn't really feel quite ditzy and weak enough to me. And then the first thing she does is like start spying and looking around and going on top of buildings and checking out their, I was like, you are not
a bee.
I was like, you are not going to pull this off. You are not going to pull this off. And so my favorite statements of people on Twitter was like, Michonne, not understanding the assignment. And so they were like, yes. B stands for badass bitch. Like, so it's like, she can't pull that off. But your thoughts on the second episode real quick.
Yeah, no. I'll say it again. I think the pacing of the episode was fantastic. You know, getting us to where we were by the end of the episode was really important. It made it me really want to watch the next episode in reality, the series. You know, I'm in.
Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I think the pacing is really good. Of course, the acting is good. There's, you know, there's no need to comment on that. But, you know, now I'm really kind of intrigued because now it's more, you know, now it's a sort of a prison break series of how are they going to get out of, you know, Dodge.
But there's also the aspect of Rick has been brainwashed and broken a little bit and they might not be on the same page.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. And you're like, oh, yeah. Okay, what does this mean?
Yeah.
All right. So I think we're saying thumbs up.
For sure.
Next up, we're going to do Death and Other Details. And we're actually going to do three episodes to try to catch up. So we're going to do episodes 5, 6, and 7. And that is 5, 6, and 7 is starting from the episode where Imogen goes to the island with the owner of the boat, Sunil. And they don't really go on vacation. They're doing an investigation, but it ends up turning into like he's trying to like romance her. And it basically works, but he's like, okay, take this bill of lading thing and turn it over to my person is going to investigate it for you. And he seems like a nice-ish guy, but there's something like the way the show operates, they're doing this thing where you're like, can he be trusted? And then you get to the end of the episode and they find the server room like built into the side of the ship. And I was like, oh, that's a no. So that kind of sucked for Imogen, but I felt like for the story, they set that up. Like, I think she has now slept with two people on the ship, and both of them have had ulterior things that are going on that makes her think she can't trust them. So it's kind of crazy. I was like, she has terrible taste in men. Like, that's my conclusion at this point. What did you think of the episodes?
I'm really liking the show a lot. It looks gorgeous, and it's got a great feel to it. It's got great editing. It's got great cinematography. It's got great costume design. I really think that, for me, the acting is very believable. So I like the chemistry between the two of them. At first, I didn't, you know, I mean.
Oh, you mean the two between who two? Which two?
Oh, well, both of her guys, actually. That's actually, it's very believable that she could fall for both of them for different reasons. You know what I mean? I thought you know, she doesn't come off, there's no slut shaming. There's no, you know.
No. It's just like both of them just turned out to not be particularly trustworthy.
No, but what I mean is like, you know, she's with two different guys on the boat and, you know, she's, you know, it fits with the story. It's not gratuitous. It, you know, it makes sense. I think the show unravels its mystery really well. It's, you know, at the core, you know, obviously there's a mystery, a multiple actually now sort of, right. We're trying to, more deaths are occurring as it goes
along.
And
that's the thing is I want to talk about the governor gets poisoned and now we have to figure out who poisoned the governor because the woman who harpooned the guy who's murder we were investigating in the first place. She's in jail, so she could not have poisoned the governor, I don't believe.
Right.
I think we're supposed to believe it was somebody else. So now the governor's dead, and now we're like, okay, what the heck is going on here? And once they found the server room, as soon as they came back, they tied up Sunil to a chair. So he's like tied up to a chair for the next few episodes, which I find kind of funny. Tom, are you watching this as well?
I'm way behind.
Oh, so you haven't seen these at all?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, then, Yusin, we're going to go all the way up to episode 7, which for me was probably the best one that they've done all season, which is they're like, okay, we're going to go back to Imogen's mother's murder, and there's things that she's not remembering, but there's also stuff that, oh, because not only did the governor get poisoned, the lawyer commits suicide.
Oh, right.
And so when he's dying, he tells the investigator, you were there, you had all the clues, and you still didn't see it. So in episode 7, they're like, okay, we're going to go back to that case, and we're going to walk through all your steps to see what you missed. And so what they do, which is really cool in this episode, is they have her replace, I almost said Indigo Montoya. What is that man's name?
Mandy Patinkin.
They have her be him in the flashbacks. And I thought that was a really good conceit and a really cool editorial visual.
Yes.
That they did. And I really liked it. I thought that was probably the strongest episode so far for me.
They did something similar in the season where the person she was placed in the circumstance, but yeah. Ran it throughout the entire episode,
right,
and they
right.
did a beautiful job. Like cinematically, it was really interesting to watch and really well done.
Yeah, I thought that was probably, like I said, it's my favorite episode so far. I still don't feel like we're any closer to figuring out who Victor Sams is at all. They're killing more people, and they're saying, we're getting closer. And I'm like, are we though? Because I genuinely have zero suspects. Like,
yeah.
Other than the head of that rich family who are the targets of Victor Sams, like he's the most sketchy person that I would suspect if it wasn't that Victor Sams goes against rich people. But yeah, I don't feel like, I mean, yes, they're unraveling, but I don't feel like they're unraveling anything. Because usually, like, in Only Murders, as the season goes on, I genuinely have a couple of suspects. And here I've got nobody. I feel like, are they on the ship? It feels like they're almost cheating, like the person isn't on the ship, you know?
I feel like they are. It isn't so much that they are or aren't cheating. It's just a different show. I don't mean this in a critique, you know, criticism, you know, but it, you know, with Murders in the Building, they definitely purposefully give you red herrings. They 100% right. set you up with people that you're supposed to kind of think it is, you know, whereas this show is just not. It's just not giving them to you. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just a different, the beats are different and the show is different. And, you know, what will determine whether or not the show actually is good or the writing is good is once they reveal who Victor Sams is whether or not we feel they've earned it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or that
yeah,
it
yeah,
makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the risk that the show is taking without giving us, you know, and that's just how it's being set up. You know, it's just being written that way. So that really will determine for me, you know, how good the show's writing turned out to be as to whether or not I will give them, you know, the reasoning behind whoever, you know, is behind all the murders. You know what I mean? So, but until then, I think the show is excellent, you know, and I think it's a great watch for multiple reasons, including the mystery.
I like the characters, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So let's move on. So we're saying thumbs up for these episodes.
Sure.
Next up, we're going to talk The Rookie, and this was the wedding and the honeymoon of Nolan and marrying the woman that none of us wanted him to marry. So
seriously, I was in the tradition of weddings going off the track or terrorist attack or bad guys attacking. I was waiting for her to get gunned down. And I'm like, come on. Really?
To be fair, they haven't actually killed anybody at any of these other weddings, but people have been kidnapped, shot, and other things at other weddings on this show. So I see why you would think so. And then the honeymoon was, I mean, they run into some rando dude who has facial surgery, and so they're like, he looks suspicious, and then they get themselves kidnapped. And I was like, okay.
Like, that was so boring.
I know, it was, yeah. I mean, I feel like they wanted to not have an episode without Nolan, but I would have been cool without him in that episode and just done other things. But yeah.
I think the storylines that I think part of the reason why we don't like her, you know, or them together is because they don't know how to write for them. They like don't have good storylines that like, I don't, you know, they're just, you know, as a couple boring.
Yes.
And you know,
like the everything goes wrong that could possibly go wrong with the wedding venue and the cake and the.
Yeah. They like, did all that stuff.
Like bad sitcom tropes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 It's, so they don't, like, they just don't know how to write for them. And I think they've kind of written themselves into a corner that they've somehow decided that Nolan has to have a girlfriend and that they can't extricate her from the show without being somehow a huge bummer to the show or to Nolan, or I don't know, maybe they're besties and they don't want to, you know, in real life. And Nolan's like, keep her on the show. You know, Nathan Fillion's like, I want her on the show. I don't know what she has over them, but they,
she's got blackmail pictures.
She's got blackmail pictures of the executive producer. I don't know, but so they
get married to a famous actor.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't really know what the deal is, but so they clearly decided to keep her on the show, but the problem is they can't write for her and write and or by make extension write for them
and make her interesting. Yeah, because the ship that I care about is actually Chin and Tim. They're the couple that I care about, and Nolan and what's her name, I still don't know that woman's name,
Bailey.
Thank you. I'd rather spend my time elsewhere. Though I will have to say the most awkward kiss goes to the rookie and what's his name?
Oh!
That was just painful. Mayday,
going down.
That was painful. I was like, oh,
You can see that coming, though.
Yeah, because he was getting attached. Yeah, I mean, to the point where, what's her name, tells the rookie, I can't think of anybody's name, tells her that you need to be careful. He's getting attached to you and not in a healthy way. You need to be on the lookout for it. And then he makes the move to kiss her. And I was like, ooh, no. And I like the fallout for that. It was good. It was like everything that you would expect. Because I'm like, this is what, not all relationships, everybody doesn't need to be paired off. And all relationships are not going to work. Thank you. So I thought that worked well. I was happy.
Yeah, it was realistic. Yeah. It was in its awkwardness.
Yeah, Aaron. Yeah, I was like, ooh.
Aaron and Selena.
So I like both of their characters, and I like them as friends. But apparently, a couple not working. But let's move on. I think I don't have anything extra special to say about the rookie at this juncture.
I want to know if the woman who plays the evil lawyer has naked pictures of somebody, because they keep bringing her back. And I don't like the character. I don't like the actor. And it's like, stop, get another evil lawyer. But
I know. Ugh. I know. It feels lazy. But all right. Yeah. Next up, we're going to talk Will Trent. And I'm trying to remember.
The jail episode where he goes. He basically visits his possible potential dad. DNA test he doesn't want done, because
I thought they did do a DNA test. Did they not?
I think somebody has, but they have not talked about results yet.
Okay, because we're assuming that his dad is this serial killer who is that dude is unhinged. But
it's interesting because he on Ally McBeal he was kind of like a doofus boss lawyer, And now he's like evil mastermind. I mean, he's like worthy of the dude on, James Spader.
Oh, the show Blacklist. That ran
too long.
Blacklist. Yeah. So
he's just so, because the whole way the episode unfurls that we're trying to find out who's responsible for girlfriend's death or would be girlfriend.
and then
all these wheels and machinations, but by the end of the episode, guess who ends up on top? It's like definitely not a coincidence.
Yeah, his I'm still gonna call him his dad, was all like, oh, I did this to protect you and to save your life. And I was like, no, you didn't. First of all, you literally threw him in the trash can. Like, as a baby, you took him and put him in the trash. You cannot tell me now you're all, I'm super protective dad guy. You did it because you enjoy killing people. Like, come on. And the guy was his rival. All those things. Yes, you get no dad points. Sorry. And then, did you see the next one, Tom, or no?
No.
Well, that's fine.
We wanted to talk about pairing the boss with Faith. Oh, sorry. Pairing the boss with Angie.
What do you mean by pairing?
Amanda.
I don't remember.
Amanda, the police captain. Nonsense. Pairing her with Angie, who we have little patience for on a good day.
Oh, she's recovering, and they were.
That was an interesting combination we hadn't seen, and I still don't care about her partner's estranged wife or whatever's going on.
Oh my god, I literally fast-forwarded that. I was like,
I do not blame you.
I was like, is this supposed to make me care that his wife is divorcing him? I do not. He's my least favorite character, and giving me more stuff with him does not help.
Nope.
Like, there's something about that actor and the way that he's portraying the character that makes him super unlikable. And just giving me more screen time with him just doesn't help the situation. So, anyway, let's move on. So, Will Trent was mediocre-ish. Like, it was better than The Rookie. I think one of the episodes, the prison one was better. Like, I did like that one a lot.
How was episode 3 for the season?
It was okay. It was like, I'm trying to remember what the heck happened. I'm blanking, so that's not good. But he's still struggling with the death of the cop. Like, there's this moment where he's learned, because right now he's learning Spanish to try to like be more connected to his mom, and the Spanish dialect that they're teaching him is almost a direct lift of a conversation that he had with the woman. Asking somebody out to dinner and then asking them something else. It was like they had it in her voice as he was learning it in Spanish, and he had like a freak out, which I thought was really moving and telling to show that he's not over it. He keeps claiming that he's fine, and he's not fine. So that was the thing that stood out to me with the episode. I don't even remember the case. I just remember he was trying to play it cool, and he lost his cool points because that was what he was doing when he was trying to like talk. Oh, this episode, there was a priest. He wasn't a priest, but he was a minister. There was a girl that was missing, and she was pregnant. It was one of those murder cases where you're trying to piece together what happened because there was like blood trails everywhere. So apparently this hitman was paid to kill this pregnant woman, and this Good Samaritan saw it happening. And what ended up happening was the Good Samaritan gets killed, but distracts the killer long enough for the pregnant woman to kill the killer. And then she tries to help the Good Samaritan, but he dies as she's trying to like drag him along. So they're trying to piece it together to figure out all the blood trails and what's going on. And you figure out that there's a missing pregnant woman. And they think that whoever's the father of the baby is the one trying to kill her. And because Will Trent doesn't trust authority figures or ministers or anything, he assumes that the minister is the one who got her pregnant. But then they introduce a politician and everybody's like, oh, nope, it's the politician. But it's actually plot twist, it's the politician's wife. So She's the one that hired the hitman. And then she goes nuts and starts shooting everybody. It was really bizarre. So, but I think piecing the mystery together on that one was actually pretty good. And then Will had to, like, deliver a baby. So that was also unexpected. But cool. Like, that part was – that he got really emotional because, you know, his whole interaction with life and being a baby and being dumped in a trash can, like, him delivering the baby was, like, super emotional for him. So he was going through some stuff. So that episode was good that way. But let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk Star Wars Bad Batch. And it is back for, I think they're doing half the season. We're getting half of it, and then there's a break, and then we get the other half. So we're going to talk about the first two episodes of Bad Batch. And Tom, why don't you lead us off with Omega being captive? Because when we left her last season, she got captured by the bad guys.
Right. I like Omega as a character. It was interesting. It felt like I somehow feel that the big experiment that's being done is tying, you know, the genetic experiment, whatever problem they're trying to resolve is going to eventually tie into how they brought Palpatine back for episode 9.
That's exactly what they're doing. Yeah.
Which for me is kind of a dead end because I thought that was a stupid plot.
I mean, basically what this is Filoni has always been like, okay, Lucas sucks as a storyteller, so let me fill in the blanks and make his story better.
He's an apologist.
He's basically trying to fix the problems because the whole, how the heck did the Emperor clone himself? What? Like, none of that made any sense when you get to the movie, right? And so he's trying to back explain it.
Retcon.
He's retcon. Yes, he is the actual definition of the word retcon. That is what he's doing with Bad Batch. And some of it works and some of it is actually not serving the story because now we're slowing the story down to tell this other story to explain somebody else's story that was bad.
Yeah.
So I get it, but it does sort of make sense for Omega to be a missing link.
Well, especially when Boba is the alpha or what's the Django, Boba, whatever.
Yeah.
Is alpha. What I think works about it is that she is so optimistic and like her relationship with Crosshair.
Right.
And
even though he's betrayed them like a bunch of times.
Oh, but yeah. Yeah. Even though he's betrayed them, the fact that she believes he is worthy of redemption. And right. Even her with the crazy creature.
Oh, that weird dog thing.
The weird dog thing with huge teeth. So I thought that was interesting. And I was glad that, you know, the scientist was trying to make her second guess herself. It's like, oh, you tried to domesticate it and that's going to make him prey instead of a predator. And then the last shot of that episode or one of the last shots is the dog surviving howling because she's, you know, transformative in terms of trying to, you know, redeem people or creatures that are thought to be irredeemable. The counterpart, and it's kind of like what, I mean, very rough analogy with the ones who live, but we see what the rest of the Bad Batch are doing while she's in captivity. They're trying to get to her.
They're trying to find her,
and they come across
right.
A bunch of young clones. And again, I think the thing that Filoni is really trying to emphasize, and I theoretically it is kind of a kid's show. I mean, it is, but it isn't. I mean, it's Star Wars. But that don't give up on people because they're worth putting yourself on the limb for. Because that was the same through line with what Hunter and Wrecker are going through with the kids and the leader of the kids, you know, basically trying to, you can be better than your programming or your conditioning.
Right.
So, you know, it still felt a little like first season, especially side missions.
Well, except that they're
trying to get to Omega.
Yeah, they're trying to get to the same point, which is Omega's trying to escape and they're trying to find her. So it feels, even though they're doing these missions, it does feel like at the beginning of the episode they're like, okay, we're gonna find Omega, we're gonna follow this lead to this, and then they are even using those kids to access the computer, it's still to the goal of finding Omega.
Oh yeah.
So I was okay with it. I was fine with it.
And Wrecker carrying the chunky robot on his back.
I like Wrecker a lot. He's so much fun. He's fun. But yeah, I thought that the beginning of the season has started off really well. And yes, they are kind of apologizing for the terribleness of the whole clone, you know, the clone thing. And they're trying to show how that happened, which I feel like, man, that's a lot of work. But I mean, he did it for Clone Wars. Honestly, he fixed Clone Wars.
Well, he fixed the prequels.
Yeah, that's what I meant. He fixed the prequels. And so now he's trying to fix the sequels.
The sequels.
And I'm like, dude, man, that's a lot of work.
Don't bother.
But anyway, thumbs up so far for Bad Batch. Next up, we're going to talk Resident Alien. And I'm going to talk with you, Sen, about this because Tom doesn't watch Resident Alien.
It's a good show, Tom. I really think you would enjoy it.
I watched the first few episodes. For shows that stumble out of the starting gate, I have a lot of time constraints on my hand. So, the first arc of season one was not great.
I'm not gonna fight you. Peter jumped on late and he just marathoned all through season one, and he's in the middle of season two right now. So I find that amusing. I've been telling him for years to watch this show, and he finally is watching it. But actually, ironically, I think this beginning of season three stumbles out of the gate. I have not been particularly happy with the opening storyline of season three, which is, oh, the Greys are trying to kill all humanity. We have to get rid of them and protect them. But then they're doing all these side stories with the side characters. I don't understand. Why? Like, we spent, God, like 20 minutes on the sheriff taking pictures of the mayor's feet for OnlyFans. And I was like, what is happening in this show right now? And it was so bizarre and so out of character for the sheriff, who they've shown to be like this kind of a misogynist. So having him do this was such an odd choice, and I still don't understand what the point of that scene was. And it was a really long scene because I kept fast forwarding because I was like, this is dumb. Yusin, what do you think of the first couple? Any thoughts? Because I want to get to the episode that I really liked. But
yeah, I mean, I think the show is amusing. You know, I don't
I'm
think
not
it's
talking
the
about
strongest
the show as a whole. I'm just
No. I'm saying the first two or three episodes, it's not its strongest episodes, you know, for sure, and it hasn't moved the story along. But they have their running jokes and they have their things, and you know, the show is amusing. The first few episodes weren't great, but they weren't terrible. That's what I'm saying. I'm counterpointing you. I don't think they were terrible. I thought they were just as kind of, you know, mildly amusing. And some episodes are going to be really funny and some episodes aren't going to be as funny. I think the OnlyFans thing didn't work. I think there's a little bit of the show. You don't watch or didn't watch Northern Exposure or Picket Fences, you told me off show. So there's a lot of now sort of really emphasizing the oddity of the characters, you know, so there's a little bit of the, like, you know, odd for odd's sake, you know, kind of thing kind of going on, which I think takes away from the organic kind of charm of the characters, you know, if they're a little bit odd or they're a little bit kind of touched. But now that, you know, we've known the characters longer and we're more attached to them, you know, they're showing us even more about them, but they're just kind of making them very odd, you know, and so that OnlyFans does stand out as being kind of almost forced, you know, to be kind of weirdly, oh look how odd and interesting this is, but it wasn't interesting at all. So I'm with you on that one, but that doesn't mean that the episodes, you know, as a whole, all three of them failed.
I don't think the gray alien stuff worked either, because they brought in an actor that I like And he's supposed to be like faux dating Asta and all of that. I didn't think that worked either.
Yeah, no. Well, that I was going to move on to the actual plot. So that was so that's me discussing the characters, the side characters kind of being made extra odd for odd's sake. And then, but as far as moving the plot along in terms of what's happening, the actual threat to and the main storyline, I don't find the Greys that threatening. No. So I'm not finding the tension.
Yeah, and then they go to Yellowstone, and they're like, oh my god, they have water caves that will make the thing erupt. Ooh, like, none of that was good.
Yeah,
so that's,
yeah.
That's my problem with the beginning of this season, is that the storyline, the main storyline, usually is strong enough that even when we go to the odd characters, it's fine. But neither were, I thought, were particularly strong. So I didn't think it worked. However, I want to move on from that to the episode that they finally just did that actually does work. Which is, they brought in this avian character who literally looks like a bird. And she comes through this weird portal and she serves Harry with papers and tells him he's being evicted from Earth, which is hilarious. And he's like, well, I can't fight City Hall sort of situation. And everybody's telling him he should counter sue and all this. And then he falls in love with the bird for some weird reason that I'm not entirely sure I follow. But it was hilarious because every time he see her, he's like, my legs, they don't work. And he just like collapse. And it was just, that was hilarious. All of it worked in that episode. Everything.
Yeah, because that's Alan Tudyk being Alan Tudyk. You know, that's giving the ball to your best player and letting him run with it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, this episode allows him to do what he does best. You know what I mean? Which is be, you know, hilariously out there and physical humor and, you know, and just the comedy, his comic timing. There was even a scene where they talked about comic timing. You know what I mean? Exactly. And you're laughing just thinking about it. And I laughed because I just could see them all sitting there, you know, filming that, you know what I mean? And trying to keep it together, you know what I mean? And not burst out laughing. And so, and he gave a little lecture on comic timing. So, yeah, so it makes sense. You know, is this the weakest season? Yes, it is. You know what I mean? And I think, like I said, beyond anything, the show always, you know, gave us this compelling kind of, sort of imminent danger sort of a thing. So the stakes were actually high. Here, I'm not quite sure if the stakes are that high. And the side story with the mayor's wife, you know, having been abducted and her baby, you know, being abducted and this and that, it's all kind of confusing actually to me. I'm not quite sure what's going on, and I kind of don't care all that much about it. So even that's
it's the only dark storyline they have going on. So that's it's actually pretty dark. I was like, oh, her baby.
Yeah.
And it actually does sort of make sense because last season we found out she was pregnant and then they kind of dropped the storyline and now we found out she had the baby and I was like, wait, what? So some of that I just feel like they haven't filled in, and that's deliberate because she doesn't remember, and so they're letting us know what she knows.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a messy season. It's a little confusing. It's not as compelling. It's not as clean, but you know, the jokes are there for me, you know, the smaller ones. And then in this episode, Tudyk gets to shine and really be his gloriously silly self.
Yeah, it was fantastic, but let's wrap that up. I'd say thumbs up for episode 4 and down for the other 3. That's just fine.
Yeah, I mean, they were fine, but the fourth one was definitely Tudyk shining and doing his thing.
All right, next up we're going to talk Avatar and episodes 3 and 4, and that is when the team gets to the town of Omashu, and Avatar runs into the king of Omashu, who is actually a friend of his from 100 years ago. They were little boys together. And now this guy is 100 years old and is the king of Omashu. And apparently is really resentful of Aang being frozen and not participating in all the conflict. And he acts like, as Aang, sorry, he acts like it was his choice to be Frozen, and that he ran. He basically treats him like he ran away from the battle, which is not what happened, because we saw what happened. And he's got a chip, very big chip on his shoulder. So that makes the interactions really tension filled, and Aang doesn't understand. Like, he can't really reconcile the boy that he knew with the man he's become. I mean, and that makes sense, because 100 years you're going to change, you're going to be a different person. So all of that makes sense, but Aang just like really was really struggling with that. And then you've got the Fire Nation having spies inside the city, and then you've got counter spies and people, you know, collaborating and who's what and all that. I didn't care as much about. And what's her name? I can't think of her name. And she runs off with these people who were like rebels, and I could tell they were bad news because they're like bombing stuff. And yeah, like that storyline I didn't care about as much. I think the Aang storyline with the king was where the story shined.
You mean with Jet, where she ran away with Jet?
Yeah, I didn't care about that much.
You know, it's interesting because I did something that I normally swear that I don't normally do, or I don't like when other people do it, which is compare it to the original. Because, you know, you got to let the new thing stand on its own, especially if it's a different medium, you know, one being animated, one being live action. So there's going to be a difference there, one being a book, one being this, one being whatever. I don't like the idea of kind of comparing it. But I have to say that I thought the animated versions did a better justice to the storytelling. The king, who was his best friend, or not best friend, but was one of his friends or whatever, he came off as so unlikable and vicious and like not even disgruntled, but just like, really, I mean, it was really unpleasant, and I thought it lost all the flavor of the kind of weirdness.
I think he thought he was charming, and like but he was like fake charming. He wasn't like a real charming, if that makes sense.
Right. Yes. But like I said, I'm dinging myself because, like I said, I'm comparing it to the animated version of the king and their interactions. And, I just felt like these were live action. They were more negative and unpleasant.
It was darker.
Yes,
absolutely.
It was darker. And so it's still a little hard for me to get used to the show, because the show is just so much darker live action than the animated. And I have to let that go, because like I said, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it's fair to do that to the show. It's its own thing. But I have to say, I think Tom bailed on the show. I don't know where Allison is on it, whether she's still watching or not. I don't love the show. I don't hate it. But it's not charming me. It's not, you know, making the show doesn't make me want to like desperately watch it. I don't super enjoy it when I watch it. I know the characters. I love the characters. I know the show. I know the storyline. I mean, so I'm watching it. I don't know if I hadn't been familiar with the property and really cared about these characters, if I would watch it. If I would continue to watch it, you know, just not knowing anything. I don't know that it's compelling enough for me, but because I have history with the characters, and because, you know, I know the storyline, I'm watching the show. But it isn't great. It isn't terrible. It got better from the first episode for me, but, you know, I'm still watching it, but I don't love it. I think solid is going to be the best, as strong as I can go. That's as strong as I can go.
Well, I don't even know. I'm going to disagree with you. I mean, I watched the animated series just as much as you did, and I know the characters and stuff like that, but I am allowing it the freedom to be very different, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it being different, and I'm enjoying it for what it is, and I do really like it. I'm having to force myself not to watch it. I'm specifically only watching to where we're doing the podcast. So like I'll watch two episodes and then I stop, you know, so that I don't want to know ahead of what we discuss.
Right.
So I'm trying that's a difficult thing for me because I thoroughly am enjoying the show. So, all right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk Shogun, and I want Tom to lead us off with that because he said that was his highlight for the week.
Yeah, Shogun's terrific, and I remember the NBC miniseries with Richard Chamberlain. I mean, so many good things to come in this show for. One, it's not told from his perspective. So we get equal points of view from the Japanese characters and him. He's important to the plot line, but it's fascinating how several reviews I've looked at compare it to Game of Thrones, and they're basically saying that the production design, the expansiveness.
Oh, yeah, that too.
They spent some money on this, where, you know, a 1980 television budget, you know, it looked fine for 1980, and Richard Chamberlain was a hot miniseries actor back then. But this really, you know, one of the things that they specifically chose, and it's a husband and wife writing team. And initially, FX tried to woo him, and she picked up the book and couldn't put it down. So she got him. It's like, we can do this. And they took their time to develop it. They took their time to shoot it. It was about 10 months total, but it looks great. And I'm invested in all the characters. I mean, it's this power struggle. And that's probably the biggest Game of Thrones comparison, is you have an underage heir to the throne. So the dying, Shogun basically selects not one regent, and we see in the flashback why, but selects five regents.
Actually, he wasn't the Shogun. That's the whole thing. The title of Shogun is passed down to the guy who is about to be executed. That's part of his family line that he could declare himself Shogun. The other guy was like emperor or whatever. He didn't have the title of Shogun.
I forget what his title was. But anyway, he appoints five regents, and the five regents don't all get along. Our main character, and he's a character, Japanese character actor you've seen in tons of stuff, and he's great. Top billing too. Gets top billing too, which is like, yeah, go. But it's basically, there's all the politicking, and Blackthorne's the wild card because he's British, and there's a bunch of Portuguese priests, and they're basically, Portugal is doing some corrupt stuff, and that's why Blackthorne was spent. So of course they're basically saying, oh, he's a pirate, he's bad, he's evil, you got to get rid of him. But the lead priest guy who's translating, to his credit, translates accurately, and
he only does that, he only translates accurately because the woman's in the room.
Getting ready to get there. The young woman who has an interesting family history as well, but she speaks fluent Portuguese because she was taught by the missionaries. She's been speaking Portuguese for 14 years. And what's kind of interesting is that basically Blackthorne kind of stumbles into becoming this pawn, and he's British, and the British are Protestants. The Portuguese are Catholics. So, you know, historically, those two factions do not play well with each other, especially this time period. But I gotta look up the name. Our main character guy, our regent guy, he basically is going to use Blackthorne as a wedge because two of the five regents are strong Catholics, and everybody else isn't. So he's basically dividing them to curry political power for himself.
Well, even basically, though he's mainly trying not to get killed. Because now, they're all, if four of them vote,
they're all gunning for him.
They're gunning for him, and he wants to delay and split their vote. So, because if they don't get a unanimous vote, they can't kill him. So he's using that dude to save his life at the moment. And that's all he's thinking about. I think it's going to become bigger as we move on, but at the top, it's more about how do I not get killed.
Korinaga is the Japanese, our main Japanese character. And in episode two, they basically, and that was kind of a really cool thing because an assassin gets loose and starts wreaking havoc. Basically, one of the maids was a plant.
Oh my God, that was awesome, by the way.
And brutal.
Yeah.
And then is coming for Blackthorn. Torinaga had switched bedrooms with Blackthorn. And so, and then Blackthorn helps defend Torinaga. But the stinger at the end of the episode is that they weren't coming for me, they were coming for you.
Yep. And so that's how he knows that the Portuguese are lying.
Yeah.
That's the proof that he needed. Is like, oh, if they want to kill you so bad, you must have something that they don't want me to know. Yeah. So and therefore
most likely knowledge. But right. No, I mean, my ship was stationed in Japan in the late 80s. So it's just, I think the NBC miniseries version, they didn't use subtitles for the Japanese, which this one does.
So everybody's speaking English? Is that what happened?
Yeah, it's weird. Don't ask. Okay. What's funny, the conceit in this show is that when they're speaking Portuguese,
they're speaking English. Right.
Which is kind of fun. But when they're speaking Japanese, it's subtitled. But I just really like that we're getting to know these, even the supporting characters are, it seems like everybody has a story and these writers are willing to let every character's story be told.
And they're all interesting.
Yeah. And they're all interesting. Yeah, no, it's great. I look forward to watching more. One of the criticisms was it should have been longer. And I'm like, no, a 10 episode limited series. That's just right. You don't need everything. Doesn't need to have a second season.
Yeah. And especially if it's based on a book that has a conclusion,
has an end.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's get to the end. Yusin, your thoughts real quick before we finish up.
It's gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful to look at.
The costume's accurate, Yusin?
You know what? I wouldn't know. I'd have to do research to let you know exactly how accurate the costumes are. It's not my forte, that time period and that, you know, in Japan. So, you know, like most people who costume shows, they do research before they're costuming them. So I wouldn't be able to tell you, but I can tell you they look gorgeous. And also the cinematography, that just, it's gorgeous when they go out into the landscape and scenery. It's dark, it's lit dark, but it works, you know what I mean? I don't feel like it's too dark. Oh, I don't know what's going on, I can't see what's going on. It has a lot of atmosphere and I'm enjoying the show a lot. I'm being a little lazy about reading. I did not expect the show to have so much subtitling. And I sound a little bit like a Philistine because I'm like, oh, I don't want to read subtitles, you know. I just wasn't expecting to read them. But now that I know that I have to, I know what I've gotten into, but it's a very compelling show. And I've paying attention and really kind of and I really love the guy who they cast as the as Blackthorn. I think he's really good.
Cosmo Jarvis.
Yeah, I have no idea who he is. I've never seen him in anything before. Yes. And I like him. I think he's doing a great job, as are all the actors. I think they're all excellent. And I'm glad that the lead Japanese guy is getting, you know, this meaty role to show, you know, he's been a good character actor for years. And so this is really good for him. And and I like the Mary-san. Uh-huh. She's good too. I think, I've seen her in, isn't she in Monarch?
She's in Monarch.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so I was surprised to see her in this. No, I'm definitely enjoying the show very much.
Hiroyuki Sanada plays Lord Torinaga, and yeah, he's great. I mean, you see him, you see him in everything, and he's always good. But yeah, it's great to see him front and center instead of as the antagonist or instead of as a sidekick or to see him. I mean, he's number one on the call sheet. That's the best Hollywood can do for you.
Yeah.
All right. So, thumbs up.
Yes. Thumbs up.
All right, so yeah. let's wrap this up. So if you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave it to campfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and listen to us on 6 Degrees of Geek and iTunes. We'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.